Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everyone. Happy Easter, happy Passover, happy whatever you're celebrating tonight. I love Easter candy. Who doesn't like Easter candy? I was doing some research on Easter candy, and you know, the top selling, and Roger, do you know the answer to this? The top selling type of Easter candy, number one.
It's probably a chocolate egg.
Yeah, Cadbury eggs, number one. I would not have thought that. I guess I would have thought jelly beans. Jelly beans are number four. And by the way, what's your favorite jelly bean, if you had to choose a jelly bean?
I love grape.
You like the grape ones?
I'm a sucker for grape.
Jerry, do you have a favorite jelly bean?
Yeah, I definitely love the orange ones.
Ah, there's no vitamin C in those. I think I like purple, and I don't know why. I'm not quite sure why. Now, if you're going to eat a chocolate bunny, and they have studied this, believe me, they probably got government funding for it. What part of the bunny do you eat first?
Got to be the ears.
Yep. Jerry?
I eat the ears first.
Yeah, 59% of people agree with you, and only 4 start with the feet or the tail. The 33% don't really have a habit or a pattern.
They just kind of shove the whole thing in their mouth at one time.
That's the case. But I really hate those peeps. They're so disgusting.
Peeps?
Really, yeah. I mean, you know, unless you light them on fire, and I've done that before.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can light them on fire.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the videos, yeah.
Yeah, and they're not good. And the candy corn I could probably do without as well.
Oh, candy corn only for Halloween.
Yeah.
I don't see it for, I mean, I understand why.
They make it in pastel colors. But,
yeah.
Anyway, that's candy.
Now I'm craving chocolate and
now,
you're all out.
I know. I should have brought some along. We have a great show. We're going to be talking about legalizing prostitution. I'm fascinated by this topic because there are feminists who say we should always keep it illegal, that it's inherently bad for women. There are some people who are very liberal and the ACLU believes that consenting adults should be able to do what they want, and there are women that make money doing it, and they shouldn't be criminalized for that activity. And we're going to have two people on each side of the spectrum kind of doing a little bit of intelligent conversation about 7:30 in that on that very topic. But one of the topics that was in the news this week, and I'm sure you've seen it and read it and thought about it, and this was the Notre Dame Cathedral burning. Within hours, donors pledged more than $1 billion to restore this beautiful icon. I've been there several times. It is a beautiful place. One of the luxury goods magnates, Pinault, announced he would donate $112 million. Another one from a L'Oreal family quickly matched the pledge. Another executive giant oil person donated another $112 million. So tell me, does this bother you? Does this bother you that people are donating $1 billion to renovate, albeit a church, a place of worship, albeit a historic, iconic landmark, a place of great art and history and tradition? No one was killed. There's no one starving. Does it offend you that people would donate money to rebuild Notre Dame and yet not perhaps donate it to cure cancer or hunger, at least in some countries, or to do something to help the homeless or diabetes or animal shelters? I don't know, anything. Does that offend you? Or do you think that people should pick and choose how they use their money, and we should stay out of it? We shouldn't be critical of people who are donating money. There's a group called EA. It's called Effective Altruism. I never heard of it before this event. And they argue that people should try very hard to identify high-impact charities and direct money to them. And basically, there are three criteria that are important according to this organization. Number one in importance is that it has to be important. It has to affect many lives in a massive way. Number two, it's tractable. That means, in their terms, I believe, that extra resources will do a lot to fix it, that perhaps you can cure a disease or you can make great inroads in feeding people. So it's something that could impact greatly the problem in society. And the third, it's neglected, that not many people are devoted to the issue, and that your money can be not only important, it can fix it, and nobody's doing it. So I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear, Have you had these thoughts? Do you think that it's appropriate that people are donating massive amounts of money to rebuild Notre Dame? 312-981-7200, 981-7200. Jerry, what do you think? I mean, I don't want to be critical of people who are doing good, because I love to see the world coming together for any cause and doing something that's in the public interest.
I think everybody should just get over it. You can donate to whoever you want to donate. If the White House burned to the ground, all the big magnates in this country would be rebuilding the White House.
You think? I think they'd just let it burn.
Well, depends on who's
I'm just,
in
I'm
office.
Just kidding. I'm just
but
kidding.
I don't discuss politics, religion, sports, or anything else.
No, I'm just saying they let it burn, because I don't think anybody wants to see any politicians anymore. But
I second that.
Yeah. It's just like, and I know that for years I served as general counsel for an animal shelter here in Chicago, and I put that on my resume and I put it on the website, and people occasionally would say to me, "No, you do that for free. That's your, you know, one of your things that you do." Pro bono, as we call it in the law. And I think to myself, you know, and with the idea, like, don't you have something better to do with your time? Like, why don't you sit on a board for something else? And I think, you know, I just feel like we all should pick and choose our charities. And sometimes, you know, people have something close to their heart. People love animals and they want to help animals. Now, is that more important than helping, you know, children who are dying? No, but we need people in all of those areas donating money as best they can. And I think that's a good thing. 981-7200, 981-7200. I guess I just would like to hear a little bit more about, would you donate to Notre Dame, knowing that all of these people are donating money? Is this something, and if you were to donate money to Notre Dame, would it be because of the religion, because of the Catholic Church? Would it be because you believe in history? Would it be because you think it's a work of art and you want to make sure that, you know, your great-grandchildren get to see Notre Dame at some point? 981-7200. Welcome in. We're talking a little bit about donating to charity. I want to hear your thoughts. 981-7200, or text me at 981-7200-312. Does it offend you that people are donating to Notre Dame Cathedral, the rebuilding of it, in the billions of dollars? It toppled a billion pretty much right away, with some very large donors giving out money. All good. I'm not criticizing. I'm just asking you, does that bother you? Do you think to yourself, what if we took $1 billion and we applied it to some sort of childhood cancer or homelessness or some other cause? Would you feel better about that? Or is it okay that people get to choose and pick? And what do you donate to? I'd like to know. Is it some cause or some charity that you like to donate? And why do you donate to it? Is it something that's near and dear to your heart? I know that a lot of people will walk for breast cancer or donate money to that cause because they have someone in their family who was special to them, and it makes them feel good to do it. Is there some cause or some charity that you've been criticized for giving money to? Should we even talk about this? Should we just be happy that someone is doing something good for our society? I have a texter who texted in and told me many rich people donate to a lot of causes. And that is true. That is true. And just because we don't hear about the donations doesn't mean they're not happening. And there's a lot of good people out there who donate millions of dollars in cash and in support for their causes. Let's go to the phone lines. 981-7200. I'd like to hear from you. Hi, welcome to the show. Hi, it's welcome to the Karen Conti Show. You're on WGN. Hello. Hi. Hello, it's Karen Conti. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yes. You tell me, you have a comment or you have an opinion on the Notre Dame contributions?
I think it's great, the outpouring of support that everybody is, well, at least I'm presuming mostly Catholics, but a lot of French people are giving. I think I would like to see like a brick or a commemorative brick or like something personally. So I don't think it's excessive, though, but I thought that might be a good idea, something to kind of, not just for, you know, the people who are giving hundreds of billions of dollars. But I think it's, I personally think it's very nice, and it's a shame it happened over the Easter holidays. Or just
yeah, I agree. And Mark, I'm gonna drop you just because you are in a wind tunnel, and I feel like my hair is getting blown just talking to you. But you know, that's true. I have friends who raise money for hospitals and other causes like that, and a lot of people will become a little more interested in donating if they have a wing named after them, a wing named after their late wife. You see that all over the place in hospitals across our city, where you have buildings named after people, and that does give people incentive to leave a legacy, to leave their name. And I think that's a good thing. And I think it's a very effective way of fundraising. And if you are a fundraiser and you have a comment on this, I'd love to hear from you. 981-7200 or text to that same number. I'm going to go to Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Hey, yes, I donate all the time. I would not donate to the Paris, France fundraising ordeal. I think it's love. I think it's wonderful that people are doing that. That's a little bit out of my category. I donate all the time.
And what? How do you pick and choose the charities that appeal to you enough to write a check?
Okay. Number one, we have veterans.
Yes.
And we have people who are working with the veterans, such as Guitars for Vets. They help the vets get into music. If you donate, that helps that vet get ready to introduce a new part of their life, such as music. And what could be wrong with that?
Catherine, do you have somebody who's near and dear to who is a veteran?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That sounds like a really interesting charity. I've never even heard of it.
It's a wonderful thing. Look it up. Guitars for Vets. There are also music programs for children. If those children are, my children are all grown, now that has nothing to do with that. If those children are into music, it fixes a certain part of the brain. What could be worse? Are they playing music? What are they doing? It stimulates a part of the brain.
Catherine, thank you so much for the call. I think that's a great thing. And I see that Catherine has music is a good soothing and a way to help people. Keys, what is it? Keys for Kids is a great program. I know if you ever want a piano or you want to give away your piano in Chicago, I think I've had that charity, right? Keys for Kids. And you can buy a very reasonably priced piano, and all of the money goes to funds to help children take lessons and get pianos and do that kind of thing. We're talking about the Notre Dame donation. We're talking about, does it offend you that we're donating billions of dollars to this cause and maybe not other causes? What causes do you like to donate money to, and how do you decide? Let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave in Chicago. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Hey, Karen. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Happy holidays.
You too. You know, in terms of the Notre Dame donations, it is astonishingly exorbitant, but I'll go for it because for the sake of history, for the sake of architecture and engineering and science and art, you know, why not? It's been around for so long and it was designed so long ago. So, you know, I'm for it.
It is, you know, it somehow evokes, especially if you've been there, it evokes mm-hmm. such a sadness because, I mean, just the way they preserved everything and how carefully everything was, and then they're in the middle of a renovation, and in the middle of this massive renovation, you know,
yeah.
this destruction happens. It really brings people to tears. Again, I hear you, and you have no problem with that kind of donation.
The French people are culturally and spiritually bound to Notre Dame. It defines them, especially the Parisians. So, but anyway, in terms of charity, though, on a different note, I do have a problem when a lot of, you know, ultra-wealthy people give to charity because more than, you know, one of the reasons why they do it is because it's a status symbol to give a lot of money. You're showing people how much you have, And you have to give to charities because in order to gain entrance into certain societies or clubs or country clubs, you have to demonstrate that you've given a lot of money to charity, too.
Dave, I'm sorry, but I'm running out of time, but I get your point, and I understand that a lot of people do that, and it becomes a status symbol, but I still think I'd rather have people donate for bad reasons or not so good reasons than not donate at all. And I think charities make people feel important when they do it. They give them, you know, a big thank you. And if that big thank you is to name a library or to name a wing, then so be it. I agree with you.
Give to the streetwise peddlers you see when you come to the city every day, because they're doing something real. And they really appreciate it when you give them a couple or a
few
bucks.
You're absolutely right. Dave, thank you so much. Thank you for the call. Thank you for your thoughts. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Great topic.
Thank you. Welcome back. It's Karen Conti. Thank you for all the calls. I got a bunch of them during the break, and I just wanted to paraphrase one from a guy who's bike riding. He took his time off the bike trail to text me. What a life we have. He was talking about Evans Scholars Foundation, which is a really near and dear to his heart, and it is to mine too. It's a very good cause, and he said that it impacts people. It put him through college in a way his parents never could have put him through college, and allowed him to succeed in life. And it's good and refreshing to have those kinds of programs when you have people, as he says, celebrities who are paying for their kids to get into these schools. But thank you very much, and be safe in your biking. But very, very interesting. And I think, just to be clear, I had some texters who thought I was criticizing the people who were donating to Notre Dame. I was not at all, because I am a firm believer that people should donate to the causes that they find near and dear to their heart, whatever that is. If it's art, if it's animals, if it's cancer, you're doing good. And people doing good and doing things out of the goodness of their heart is something that should never be criticized. And it's just the reason I brought up the topic is that people are talking about it. And it is an awful lot of money. And it's a very unusual thing to have happen. But thanks, everyone. Our next two guests are going to be very interesting. We are going to talk a little bit about the legalization of prostitution. This story kind of comes to a head. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft, 77-year-old man, and 24 other men were arrested and charged with prostitution in a massage parlor in Florida. There was idea that there's some video out there that's being leaked to the press and being sold, and it's causing all kinds of issues. And it's causing people to talk about the issue of prostitution. Should we legalize it? It's the oldest profession in the world, as they say. And some even think that the issue may even make its way to the 2020 presidential election. And is prosecution of prostitution a waste of resources, or is prostitution just inherently unfair and bad for women and doesn't necessarily victimize them? With us, we have Dr. Melissa Farley, a clinical psychologist for over 45 years. She's a researcher and feminist anti-pornography and anti-prostitution activist. She's written many books speaking out against prostitution, and she's even consulted with the UN on these types of issues. Currently, she's the executive director of Prostitute Research and Education. Welcome to the show, Dr. Farley. Welcome, Dr. Farley. How are you? Okay. Ben, do we have Dr. Farley? Okay. I'm going to go to our next guest, Abigail Hall Blanco, PhD, is an assistant professor of economics at the University of Tampa. And she also writes and researches about a number of important issues, including the legalization of prostitution. Dr. Blanco, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Farley, are you there? Okay. Dr. Farley, are you there? Okay, Ben, can you try to get her on the phone? Okay, good. Well, I'm going to just talk a little bit about just the big picture, Dr. Blanco, is you believe that prostitution should be decriminalized. Is that a fair statement of your position?
Yes, absolutely.
And could you give me about two or three bullet points of why you think that prostitution should be legal in the United States?
So first thing to, from my perspective as an economist, is my job is to look at theory and data and to analyze policies in the following way. Does a policy, whether it's enacted or a policy that's proposed, achieve the particular goals that we, either as like the general public or policymakers, want for it to achieve. So my primary reason for legalizing prostitution center around this idea that having an illegal market has a very particular set of implications for the market structure in which people buy and sell sex. Legalizing prostitution fundamentally changes the market structure in which sex is being bought and sold.
And how does it do that in a negative way?
So the criminalization of prostitution does a few different things. It doesn't eliminate the market for sex. Instead, it pushes the market underground. This has a variety of implications for a number of things that people care about, including individuals who are proponents of prohibition of prostitution. So things like health outcomes, danger to sex workers and the violence that they potentially face, as well as things like human trafficking and cartelization. So on all of those margins, we see that prohibition has been largely ineffective at achieving those goals. Theoretically, legalization does a better job of achieving those goals, and empirically, the data bears that out.
Thank you. I'm going to get Dr. Farley on the phone. Dr. Farley, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Hi.
I'm glad you finally decided to join us.
I'm thrilled. So
thank you so much. So you are against prostitution being legalized, and I just asked Dr. Blanco to give me some bullet points on why she thinks it should be legalized. Can you give me the other side of it kind of in a bullet point fashion?
Sure. Prostitution is not a choice for people in it, the way you and I make a choice to listen to this radio station, Karen, or the way other people make choices. Prostitution is a last-ditch survival alternative for people who don't have other choices for survival. Usually, these are very poor women who are very young and who are often from racially or ethnically marginalized groups in Chicago and every place else in the world. Prostitution is legal sexual harassment. If you don't think sexual harassment is a good thing for you and me, then why should money make it possible for someone who has already said to us she doesn't want to be there? My suggestion legally in terms of a solution to prostitution is never to arrest the person in prostitution, whether that's a woman, man, trans person. I'm not in favor of any arrest of that person. However, I am in favor of arresting the person causing the harm to the prostituting woman. That is the John, the person like Robert Kraft, Elliot Spitzer, or many, many other men who choose to buy sex. They're the ones making the choice, not the person in prostitution. And there is now a 20-year body of literature that shows the immense harm that's caused when you are used as a receptacle for someone to masturbate into. It causes huge damage, not only to one's body, but to one's mind and psychological state of being.
I want to talk just a little bit. Dr. Blanco brought up the idea, and there's a lot written about driving this underground so that I hear stories about maybe women who don't even carry condoms around because if they're arrested, that would be proof they're a prostitute. Or it's the statistics on the number of women who are in the sex trade who are raped and abused and murdered are phenomenal. And so, yeah. So the question is, would if you legalized it, and I guess, Dr. Blanco, I'm going to hear from you a little bit. I take your position is that women would be able to come forward to police a little bit more openly and be able to get these offenders off the street. Is that what your position is?
Yes. So there are a couple of different pieces to that. So there's the safety piece to that, and there's also the health outcomes. So as you pointed out, you're more likely to engage in riskier behavior when you are operating within a black market. So you mentioned prostitutes not wanting to be caught with condoms, for instance. But there's also difficulty in doing things like screening clients for individuals who may be intending to harm you or not taking the time to have a discussion with someone about their sexual history. So they've done a variety of studies looking at both of these particular things. You have former sites like Redbook, which had provided a vast amount of information for sex workers until the FBI shut it down. Looking at data related to medicine, there's a recent medical study looking at 130 different studies between 1990 and 2018, analyzing the differences between legal markets and prostitution and illegal markets. And what they found was that under legal regimes, sex workers were half as likely to contract HIV and other STDs, and they were 30% less likely to have sex without a condom compared to workers who are operating in illegal markets.
Dr. Blanco, can you hold what your thoughts? And I also want to hear from Dr. Farley on this issue. We have to take a break. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We have Dr. Farley and Dr. Blanco talking about the issue of whether prostitution should be legalized. There are over 42 million people worldwide who make a living selling sex, over 1 million in the United States alone. 70 to 95% say they have been sexually assaulted. 60 to 75% say they have been raped. We're talking about the issue of whether prostitution should be legalized. And we have two fabulous guests, Dr. Melissa Farley and Dr. Abigail Hall Blanco, who are giving us the idea of both sides of this very important issue. And obviously, both women here would like to see women be safer and women not get hurt. But I think they both have a different way of looking at it. Dr. Farley, can you follow up a little bit on Dr. Blanco's explanation of how she thinks that from a medical and safety standpoint, women would be better off if we kept the laws as they are and made prostitution illegal?
You know, I think all of us intuitively think maybe legal prostitution, like legalizing and regulating other industries, will make it safer. In the U.S., we really need to look at what has happened in other countries. I've spent quite a bit of time recently in Germany and in the Netherlands, and both of these countries have legal prostitution, and it's actually frightening and appalling what the situation is there. You've got the mayor of Amsterdam, Job Cohen, who has said, "We thought it would help to regulate and legalize prostitution, and we made a mistake." They're in the process of closing down the legal brothels in Amsterdam, and the Dutch parliament is about to have a hearing on this issue. I was in three brothels, legal brothels, in the last couple weeks in Frankfurt. Do you know who runs these brothels? The Hells Angels.
Oh my gosh.
This legal prostitution is like putting out a welcome mat to organized crime and pimps. It's turning these individuals into normal, everyday businessmen. And believe me, they take full advantage of it. You have a report from the New Zealand government itself 5 years after legalization or decriminalization, which is a form of zoned prostitution, the government of New Zealand saying, no, it did not make it any safer. Women are still coerced and forced by what the government is calling managers, but they're in fact pimps that run massage parlors, just like the one you mentioned that Robert Kraft was in. These are women that are under the control of organized crime, and it does not make them any safer.
Dr. Abigail Hall Blanco, you're on the other side of this issue. How do you respond to this, that when you legalize it, it doesn't make it any better? Is there some way to make it better that hasn't been used by a country yet, or what's your position on that?
So my position, again, and I think that Dr. Farley and I would agree, that at the end of the day, what we're looking for is to have policies which make things as safe for sex workers as possible. One thing that's important to note, it's interesting that she brings up Germany and the Netherlands, because you have organizations like
the Professional Association for Erotic and Sexual Service Workers in Germany, who have self-reported, so these are people working in the industry, that issues like trafficking and violence have decreased since these types of laws have been enacted. I think it's important to note about the trafficking piece as well, that the idea that legalization would increase trafficking really doesn't make logical sense. You see that traffickers like to go after items or services which have high prices. Making something illegal makes it costly. Making something legal makes it cheaper. Now, we can debate whether or not we like the idea of people being able to buy and sell sex cheaply. But traffickers, one of their worst nightmares is the idea of having a perfectly legal market where sex workers can come forward to say, I am being, in the event this is occurring, I'm being exploited, I am being harmed, and not being further stigmatized or exploited or harmed by having law enforcement not believe them. Unfortunately, a lot of the data that people or pro-prohibition individuals bring out regarding trafficking conflates all trafficking with sex trafficking and relies on studies which frankly use data that makes some very fundamental statistical mistakes.
I want to go switch just a little bit. Dr. Farley, you speak out against prostitution, but also pornography and other things like this. And I hear this all the time. I'm not saying this is my position, lest my texters start to get nasty with me. But I hear, you know, isn't it always an inequitable situation where women date men, men take women out for dinner, they want to have sex, so they take them out for dinner. Women want financial security, so they're willing to do certain things with men to get that. And that when you go into the high-end call girl, whatever you want to call them, the high-end prostitution, which is probably a minority, a vast minority of the sex trafficking or sex trade that goes on, that these women are in control. They're making a lot of money. They could not make the amount of money that they're making doing something else, and that they should be free to do that. What's your position on that, Dr. Farley?
Well, first of all, there was a study out of Chicago that found that there's the same incidence of rape in escort and street prostitution. So it doesn't matter whether you got silk sheets at the Hyatt Regency or you're in the backseat of a car. No matter the class level of prostitution, women are still getting hurt and verbally humiliated with words that I can't even say on the air. I mean, certainly there's race vulnerability, there's economic vulnerability, and there's sexual inequality and vulnerability. And the more you decrease those, the more choices women have. There is a really good model out there in the world that's now been used by 7 different countries, speaking of making women safe legally. It's the Swedish model that was just recently adopted by Israel, France, Republic of Ireland, and several Nordic countries. It does 3 things. It does not arrest the person in prostitution. She's offered a choice, get out, stay in. Either way, she's not arrested. But she is offered exit services, and that involves housing support, vocational training, drug and alcohol treatment, health care. And the third thing that happens under this Nordic model law on prostitution is that since prostitution is recognized under these 7 countries as sexual violence, sexual exploitation, sexual harassment, the perpetrator, i.e. the Johns, they are arrested when they buy sex, not when they have sex with somebody that does not involve money. It's not about a moral situation where there's an objection to sex per se. It's about money used as coercion. So the John is arrested, and somebody like Robert Kraft would be automatically arrested for buying the sex act he bought in that brothel in Florida that was filled with trafficked women from...
Dr. Farley, I'm running out of time. This is such a great issue. I'm going to give you literally 20 seconds, Dr. Blanco. Are there any parting thoughts that you have or anything you want to respond to?
Sure. So one of the things is that even if we think that sex work is a last-ditch resort, women who are in that profession have deemed it by their very choice to be there, that they think that that is the best alternative out of the set of alternatives that we have. If we make that alternative less safe or take it away, we make them worse off. Organizations like Amnesty International, the World Health Organization, and even medical journals like The Lancet are in strong support of legalizing prostitution because they recognize the benefits to sex workers. On those margins that Dr. Farley, myself, and others particularly care about.
I want to thank both of our guests, Dr. Melissa Farley and Dr. Abigail Hall Blanco. I'm going to put their contact information on the website along with the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on this holiday weekend, and thank you for your insight. It was really, really important to have this conversation. Thank you so much.
Did it ever occur to you that I might be a very good attorney?
Well, you damn well better be. I raised you.
Beat the rap, get the acquittal. How about a prenup if you're non-committal? How about a prenup if you're non-committal? How about a prenup if you're non-committal? Spring break, Ron. Equals workman's comp. Workman's comp. Equals workman's comp. How about a prenup if you're non-committal? Spring break, Ron. Equals workman's comp. Mistress pregnancy. Mistress pregnancy. Company in bankruptcy. Company in bankruptcy. Deadbeat dad gets the boot. Need to file a class action suit? In a legal contract where someone blundered, call Karen Conti. 312-981-7200.
How about a prenup if you're non-committal?
I have to thank Bob Gordon, who is my favorite client in the world. He considers himself to be the best white rapper in the world. And he not only wrote that rap for me, but he performed it. It's fabulous. Bob, thank you so much and happy Easter to you. Now is the time where I take legal calls. Hey, if you want to talk about anything you want, you want to talk about prostitution being legal, you want to talk about Jussie Smollett. I know I mentioned him with Brian Noonan and I got a bunch of texts. And if you want to talk about what's going on with the Kim Fox administration, I'm happy to weigh in and have a conversation about that. 981-7200, 312-981-7200. 7200. I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been doing this for 33 years. I've practiced in a lot of different areas in the past. And so I can kind of answer questions on different topics or at least give you some advice in the right direction. I may not be able to specifically tell you what to do, probably won't do that, but at least I can give you a little bit of background information and maybe some sources to find the answer. And I always am willing to talk to you during the week. I find it to be probably my favorite part of the week when people call in to my office. I can return the call. The best way to do it is an email, because then I can get hear your problem, your issue. I know where you are. You're going to tell me what county you're in, what city you're in, and what you need and when it happened, and give me a few facts. Not too long, but just give me enough to know what it is you need. And I can either send you to a lawyer who I know and trust, or I can send you to a website or maybe give you a link or maybe even give you a short answer to send you in the right direction. My number at the office, and put this in your phone because you don't always need a lawyer, but when you do, you kind of need one right away, and it's always good to have my number. 312-332-7800, and I do get back to you. I think you're the listeners out there who have contacted me for one reason or another know that I do get back to you, and I do try to do exactly what I'm telling you that I do. And the email address, another thing you should put in your cell phone, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. That's WGN@AskKarenConti, KarenConti.com. Any questions you have or any comments you have? Let's go to Ed in Chicago. Hi, Ed. Welcome to WGN.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the aspect of prostitution being legal or illegal.
Yes.
It doesn't seem to be a healthy thing for our society, to me at least, and I think that's maybe some of the, you know, how does morality and legality sort of intersect and whether it should be legal or illegal. I mean, I understand it happens, but, you know, just because something happens doesn't necessarily mean that we should allow it or, you know, promote it because, it, you know, make it legal and then sort of therefore promote it, I think.
Ed, I'm glad I'm talking to a man about this. What about it is not good. And, you know, you're saying it's not good for society. It's not something we should condone because it's a negative thing. What in your view is negative about it?
Yeah, and this is difficult. I mean, it just doesn't seem like paying for sex is a healthy way to live. I realize that's some of personal opinion. You know, I don't think it doesn't seem to me like there's a lot of positive, healthy, physical health consequences from it. And I mean, it can't be healthy for the prostitutes themselves. I mean, it's got to be a difficult life.
And do you have this feeling? I guess I have this feeling. I think if I had a son, and I knew that my son was doing it, and say he's of age, but he was a person I raised, right? And I raised him hopefully seeing a good example, a strong woman who's out there doing good things and is making a living and honest and sincere and trustworthy, and he's paying for a woman to have sex with him, and he has no relationship with her. She doesn't want to, you know, she doesn't want to be there. She's not interested in him. She's interested in getting whatever money it is and for having him do whatever it is as quickly as he can. It just seems like an unhealthy relationship, not only from a woman's standpoint, that's clear, but from a man's standpoint. You know, and again, that sounds, I think there are probably men out there who are going to say, well, you know, if men have been doing it forever, and if that's what they want, it's better than having to take her out for dinner three times. You know, how do you feel as a man? Is it unhealthy for a man, do you think?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, this is difficult, but I am actually I when I heard your topic, I was like, oh, I have to call. I'm somebody that's actually a recovering sex addict, and I've been sexually sober for a number of years, and this is sort of like if you think alcohol to the alcoholic, you know, that's how I was, and I started at pornography and moved, you know, I did engage in hiring prostitutes. I came to a point when I said, this isn't, you know, I have a real problem with this. It's affecting the entirety of my life. I have to stop doing it. And so I went into a 12-step program for this.
That's really interesting. And for listeners out there, I do some family law, Ed, and so I run into both sides of this issue from the woman's standpoint and the man's standpoint. And it is a very harmful thing. It destroys relationships. It destroys your life. And is it? I mean, tell our listeners. I mean, it's a real thing. It's as real as a drug addiction or anything else.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing things against what I felt to be true or moral, and against my own better judgment, and saying, no, I don't want to do this. No, I don't want to do this. And then it was too overwhelming or too powerful for me. I could not stop. I wanted to stop more than anything. And I was at a point of absolute despair, and no amount of wishing or praying or, you know, self-determination ever got me through it. And I finally, you know, reached out for help and was directed to a 12-step program that was, you know, when I was able to go and ask for help from other people in a 12-step program, that was really what made the difference for me and was able to achieve sexual sobriety.
I just have a second, but this is fascinating to me, and I think it's really interesting for the listeners to know and to understand this. Just quickly, let's just say that prostitution was more illegal, in that there was less of it around, and there were higher consequences to you having sex with women for money. Do you think that would have helped your issue, or was your issue an internal issue, and you would have had this issue no matter how prostitution was legal or illegal?
Yeah, it would not have mattered. It might have stopped me from entering into it for a while, but eventually I just could not stop. It would not have mattered. And had I been caught, I would have suffered really severe consequences in my own personal life, beyond just the arrest, but it would not have mattered in any way what consequence you could have put down.
It was the strong.
I just was not capable of saying no.
Ed, thank you so much for sharing, and congratulations on taking care of your problem. And for people out there, that's an inspiration when it comes to whatever your issue is. And I really appreciate it, Ed. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care. We'll come back. We're going to be taking some more legal calls or some opinions that you might have on Jussie Smollett about legalization of prostitution.
You can put away your tissues because here's the answer to your legal issues. 30 years experience in this town. Karen Conti wears the legal crown and it's about to go down.
Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. This is the time I take your legal questions or your comments on any topic that is of interest to you. Feel free to give me a call here. Happy to chat with you, 312-981-7200. I had a texter who said, oh, Karen, talking about prostitution on the holiest day of the year, Easter Sunday. This is a family day. I thought you were more classier than that. Think of your subject matter. You know, I just, it's Easter. It's the end of the day. I thought this was an interesting topic. It was in the news this week. I planned the show, and it wasn't something that I thought of that to offend people, and I'm sorry if I offended you. Okay? Give me a call here, 981-7200, and I wanted to talk a little bit about there was a news story last week that was in the news, and it was something I was going to talk about, but interestingly, I had an email from a woman in Milwaukee, Catherine. She said, did you see the article about the nurse at Vanderbilt in Nashville who was being prosecuted for making a mistake that caused the death of a patient? I am a nurse, and this is scaring me and all of my colleagues. And I did see the story. It's a really interesting story. It's a woman who is a nurse, and she made a terrible mistake. There were two medicines, and they both began with a V, I believe. And instead of giving the one with a V, she gave the other one. One was an anti-anxiety pill, and one was one that was used during anesthesia, and it ended up killing the patient. It was a horrible situation. But medical errors are common, and unfortunately, they are very, very common. And if you do the research online, you can see how often mistakes are made in the hospital, whether it's by doctors, nurses, attendants, and even pharmaceutical, even in the pharmacy, they make mistakes as well. And it's a very unfortunate thing. But the idea of prosecuting a nurse for making an error, you know, that's something that, you know, literally go to jail, not suing her for damages, not suing her malpractice carrier, but actually bringing charges to incarcerate her. It seems to me that that's a problem. And again, if it were my loved one, obviously, I would probably feel like I'd like to throw her in jail and like to do it myself and maybe even do something else. So I'm not speaking for on terms of compassion or what I would do in the situation. But from a legal standpoint, when people make mistakes, it doesn't seem like it's the right thing to prosecute them. Now, if she were drunk and she came to the job drunk, or she was texting on her cell phone and she was being reckless and she was not paying attention in a way that was somehow unusual, that's something that I could see maybe there being some sort of criminal prosecution. But that is just sending a message to professionals, medical professionals. And listen, Jerry just had some issues in the last year, and he's been in the hospital quite a bit at Northwestern. And those people over there, they work very, very hard. I have nothing but the greatest respect for the nurses and the attendants and everyone down to the people that come and change sheets. They do a good job, and they try very hard for the most part. And the idea of prosecuting someone when a mistake is made, I agree with you that that's something that is of concern to me and probably would be of concern to people like yourself, nurses who are doing the best they can. It's a tough job. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff is calling from Texas. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Hi, Jeff. Or should I say howdy? Hi, Jeff. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Just want to say thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you.
Pro bono.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. You know what? It's my pleasure because I always feel, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like there's this just big barrel of good. And if you throw enough good in the barrel, you get some of it back.
Yes. Karma is good. Karma is always good.
Yep. Yep. Okay. What's your question?
My father, a very well-respected member of the community, was arrested on domestic battery on Friday. Mm. And my issue is, you know, but he's got the beginning stages or advanced, I don't know, whatever stages of dementia. The arrest was is just a domestic battery, but there's extenuating circumstances, like he was loading a .22 rifle as the cops were showing up, and they confiscated all his guns. My fear is I'm down in Texas, so I'm driving up tomorrow to be with my mother, who obviously I'm in fear of her life and him getting out. And he has a video hearing tomorrow for bond. And I'm just scared. He's very manipulative. He's very smart. We're talking master's degree here. We're talking, he's a smart guy. And Jeff, he has moments of brilliance. And
okay. Let me just ask you a couple questions. Is this in Illinois?
Yes.
Okay. And how severe is his dementia? And did that cause him to do something violent to your mother?
There's been one report 3 years ago on elder abuse my mom put on him. And he's always been violent. Okay. He's one of those closet violent people. Good standing member of the community. I can't even say his profession because I don't want to put that out there. But good standing member of the community, master's degree pre-law. And he has moments of brilliance.
So, let me just ask you this. Does he have a lawyer? Do you know if he has a lawyer?
No, he does not.
Okay.
I don't think he can. He doesn't even remember his home phone number at this point.
Okay. See, this is a really tough one because was your mother hurt?
Yeah, they took pictures of her neck, which he had put her in a chokehold prior to going into the bedroom to load the gun. This is like 5:30 in the morning. And like I said, my fear is this isn't the first time this has happened, you know, and they're older, you know, they're 72, 73 years old.
Jeff, is your mother able to leave the house and be able to go somewhere to get away? Or is that what she wants to do? Or is she still going to be tied to your dad?
Oh, no, she's not leaving the house. She refuses to. I've called the jail, and they said that there's already a no-contact order on them automatically for 30 days. This is out in Ogle County.
Okay.
So there's an automatic no-contact for 30 days, she said. But, you know, we all know that doesn't stop somebody from doing something.
Right. You know what, Jeff, this is a really serious issue, as you know, and I can hear it in your voice, and I see that you're coming up to take care of this. And it's interesting because, when someone is in a smaller town, I take it this is in a smaller town than Chicago, it's Ogle County, sometimes people get treated a little bit differently when there are members of the community like this. And there's also some sympathy sometimes for people who have Alzheimer's and dementia, when in fact, I understand compassion, but not in this regard, because when people become, there's some people who become violent when they have dementia, and this could be a very volatile situation. I'd like you to email me at my office or call me. Let me see if I can get you a lawyer who your mom can deal with to try to get the best deal she possibly can to keep him out of the house. It looks to me like she might have to file for divorce and get an exclusive possession order, which means that she gets the house, she gets to change the locks, and that order of protection gets extended, hopefully, for at least 2 years.
That's actually what she's working with right now. She's working with a group out of Rochelle or something that is going to help her file that tomorrow for
Great.
2 years.
Great. Okay. Well, that's good. If you need somebody else, let me know. I have to run here, but if you want to talk further, call me at the office. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to have Ben give you the number, but I'm going to give it out right now. 312-332-7800 or Jeff, I don't know if you're in your car, but it's WGN at AskKarenConti.com. And if you need another referral out in that area, let me know. If it's an organization, that's great. You may need an actual lawyer to retain to get a divorce on file, because that's the only way you're probably going to get that exclusive possession order. All right.
Can I ask you one quick question about the dementia part?
Yep.
Is it possible the judge will continue the case based on a psychological evaluation?
That's possible. And that's if someone asserts it. That's a possibility, but in the interim, the judge will almost certainly extend the order protection. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. You're listening to Karen Conti Show on WGN.
K to the A, R to the E, N. Karen. She's the pop. Conti. K to the A, R to the E, N.
And we go a little something like this. Hit it!
Criminal investigation. Legal interpretation. Swindle of the elderly. Mistaken identity. Second chances. Unwanted advances. Coworker flirtation. HR violation. Wrongful termination. Legal consultation.
Karen. She's the pop. Conti.
Whatever your legal jam, call Karen Conti as fast as you can.
Karen. She's the pop. Conti.
Whatever you're wondering, call 312-591-7200.
Karen. She's the pop. Conti.
Taking your legal questions or your legal comments on anything that you have seen this week, anything that's of interest to you. I practice law mainly in the area of family law, but I can answer your questions if you have an employment issue, perhaps workers' compensation, if you have a will or probate estate planning kind of question. I may not be able to give you an exact answer, but I can maybe steer you in the right direction. Call me here at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And if you don't get through or you would like to talk to me in private, my number at the office is 312-332-7800. And my email address is WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Ben will be taking your calls. He's going to be screening all your legal calls, and we'll get you right on the air. Quickly, I had my doorman, just as I was leaving my apartment today, said, what do you think of Kim Kardashian going to law school or trying to be a lawyer? And I was actually very amused by it. I kind of followed it a little bit. I don't, just so you know, I don't even really know what Kim Kardashian does. I don't think I've ever seen anything she has done on television. I know it's a reality show. I know she's involved in fashion and cosmetics, but I I know who she is, but I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. But I was interested in it because her father, Robert Kardashian, was a good attorney, and he gained some notoriety during the O.J. Simpson matter. He was friends with O.J. Simpson and defended him for a short period of time, kind of dropped out and let Robert Shapiro take over, and then ultimately Johnny Cochran as well. But, Kim Kardashian got a little traction. She worked as an advocate for a woman who was a 63-year-old woman who was serving life in prison for a nonviolent drug crime. And President Trump did grant her clemency, this woman clemency, after Kim Kardashian went to the White House and met with President Trump. And she achieved something that was very difficult to achieve, which is to grant clemency to somebody. And she worked, apparently, with some lawyers to get that done and to kind of lend her name to the whole issue. And I have to say, good for her. But what's interesting about Kim Kardashian is she did not graduate from college. And a lot of people are asking, how could that possibly be that she could be a lawyer if she never graduated from college? And interestingly, California and a few other states do not require a law degree as a prerequisite to taking the bar exam. Illinois, you certainly do have to have not only a college degree, but you have to have graduated from law school, and then you take the bar exam and pass it, and then you become a practicing lawyer. California doesn't require that, and it's a very interesting. They allow, and I don't know all the ins and outs, but they allow people to become law readers, which means you apprentice, and this was back in the day of Abraham Lincoln, he read the law, which means he studied and then he apprenticed with a practicing lawyer for a designated period of time, after which he would become a lawyer. And in this case, they take a baby bar exam, which is a preliminary bar exam after a certain period of time. Then they study for maybe another 3 years or so. They have to a certain number of hours, certain number of days, and then they take the bar exam. And so it's probably, I would say, a difficult task to do. Taking the bar exam in California, by the way, very difficult, the most difficult bar exam in the country. And I know that because I took it about 25 years ago and passed it. And I was one of 15% of people from out of state who took the bar and passed it. Most people fail it when you're coming from out of state. And even now, I want to say their pass rate is somewhere between 30 and 40%. So it's a very difficult thing to do. It's something that you have to study for and you have to know what you're doing. But it's kind of interesting, though, how people are reacting to her. And I know people roll their eyes and they don't take her seriously. And they've used the phrase, you know, Kim, stay in your lane. But I have to say, I've thought about this, and I want to roll my eyes a little too, but I think to myself, if she really is going to do this, if she's going to dedicate herself for the next probably over three years to study what she needs to study, do what she needs to do, and take that very difficult bar exam, where, listen, you know, it's not going to be like the college admission scandal. You're not going to pay money to have someone take the bar exam when you're Kim Kardashian. Everyone is going to know that she's doing this. It's going to be legitimate. And if she passes it, good for her. And you know what? If she does pass it and she sets a good example for everybody who can, you know, be in their late 30s and start a new career and go to school and educate themselves to be better than they are, I think that's a great thing. And better yet, use it for the good. Use it to get people out of jail who should be out of jail, or use it to benefit something and someone in our society. And I'll welcome Kim Kardashian on the show anytime to talk about all the good she's going to do for the world, I hope. Let's go to Joe. Remember, the number here is 981-7200, 312-981-7200. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have a moral dilemma.
Okay.
I have a relative that tried to steal my identity.
Oh, my gosh. And how did he do that?
They tried to get credit cards on my name. I had bills coming to me because I guess they succeeded once or twice.
So are you asking me that you want to have this this relative punished and how to go about that? Or are you...
No, I want some, hey, my lawyer says I should do this, rather, you know, just a firm way of saying that I know.
So, I'm sorry, what do you mean? What is your...
I want to nip it in the bud without going to, but what would a lawyer say in this situation? What I'm saying is that my lawyer said to do this because I've caught you trying to take my identity.
Your lawyer is telling you to do what? When you say this, what do you mean?
That's where ... waiting for you to answer that question.
Oh, okay. I mean, this all depends. You know, okay. So a lot of times I get that question. A family member, you know, is taking money from the elderly mother, or is, you know, stealing an identity, or doing something wrong, or stealing from somebody. The question is, do you want to go the legal route, or do you want to get it to stop? I mean, if you went to your, I'm going to say your cousin, I'll just make it up, your cousin John is doing this, and you say to your cousin John, I caught you, you did this, this is illegal. If you do it again, I will have you prosecuted. I'm going to give you a chance to pay back the money or undo whatever it is that that person can undo to make your life simpler here, and give that person an opportunity to come to the table and do it and make good. If not, and if that's something you don't want to do and you feel like you want him prosecuted, then you would have to swear out a complaint with the police department, and maybe the state's attorney would get involved, and charges might very well be brought. And I don't know exactly where you live or how seriously they're going to take that. Police don't usually love paper crimes, but they now have some divisions in some municipalities where they will prosecute these things. And then you have to be willing to come and testify against your relative, and that might be something that's hard for you from a morality standpoint. So
yeah, it's always been an easy touch, and I would love for it to go away, but it could happen again at any time. So.
Has this relative done? You said that maybe he's done something before.
No, I've got bills that came that weren't mine, and they went away quick enough because, you know. But bills came to my address that weren't mine, and I could prove they weren't mine. So.
Okay. Did you straighten out that part of it at least so that the creditors...
Yeah, that part got straightened out, but
Well, you're lucky.
There's only one black sheep in my family, and I know who it is. So,
and you know where he's grazing, you're telling me.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I have to say, sometimes as a lawyer, I can tell you there's two directions, you know, where you can go. But that's going to be something that you need to make that decision yourself. And I have seen when a person in your situation from a societal standpoint, you make that accusation, you bring that person to justice, you go and you testify. And sometimes your family turns on you and says, how could you do that, Jeff or Joe? How could you do that to John? And, you know, we're going to shun you because you should never have done that to your relative, when in fact he's the one who did, you know, the wrong thing here. So you have to consider that. Yeah. And that's a Joe decision. That's not a Karen decision.
Yeah,
right,
that's what I mean. It's a moral dilemma, and I thought I could get some advice, but I'm still sort of in limbo and I don't know what to do. All right, it is a Joe issue. So all right, thank you, Karen.
All right, well, good luck to you. All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. When we come back, I'm going to take some more legal questions, but I also want to get the third caller because we're going to do a little Easter quiz. And then we're going to talk to Rick Hogan about what he's going to be doing next on the show. Give me a call here. The third caller will play for a very valuable prize, which is a Karen Conti show hat. Not very valuable. 312-981-7200. You're listening to WGN.
In your Easter bonnet. Upon it, you'll be the grandest fellow in the Easter parade.
Do you know who's singing? Ben, you have no idea who's singing. Jerry, do you know who's singing?
Judy Garland,
you're right.
And I actually knew.
You knew? Right. You did, but I didn't hear you jump in and say Judy Garland.
No, my mom has the entire Rodgers and Hammerstein collection on vinyl. I grew up in a musical household.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, I knew this one.
Okay. All right. No, she's got a beautiful voice. You can still give us a call here, but I think what we're going to do right now is we're going to do a little Easter quiz. Actually, it's kind of Easter, it's kind of eggs, it's kind of just a bunch of stuff. And who's playing with us tonight, Ben? Is that Mia in Chicago? I think that's who I'm playing with, right? Is that Mia? Yes. Okay. Hi, Mia. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Happy Passover. Happy spring. You know, have you gone from taking the boots out and putting the sandals in? Have you done that yet?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm wearing a winter coat and like flip-flop type shoes. It's the weirdest thing.
Well, it is weird. And it was so funny because I was driving around my neighborhood today in Chicago. And it was funny because you saw all different people with all different things. You know, you see these girls with like the off-the-shoulder things, but they still have boots on and hats.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of all mixed up. And people with their convertibles, but yet they're still wearing scarves and hats. It's a good thing.
It's Chicago.
All right, Mia. Very valuable prize. Jerry, you're in keeping score, so make yourself useful. I think Jerry is trying to watch Game of Thrones. I'm not even sure it's on yet. But anyway, he's on his phone watching Game of Thrones instead of listening to his wife. But, you know, that's what happens. All right, here we go. I'd say if you get five right, you win the prize. Ready?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
The most expensive jeweled eggs in the world were made by who? Carl Cadbury, Judith Lieber, Carl Fabergé, or Yoko Ono?
Fabergé.
That is correct. Carl Fabergé. We saw all those beautiful eggs. They're in museums all over the world. I still would never buy one. Okay, there you go. Mia, next one is, what color of eggs doesn't Sam I Am like in the Dr. Seuss book?
Green eggs.
That is correct. Green eggs and ham, but don't say ham if you've been listening to Brian Noonan. Did you hear his story about the ham?
No, I did not.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't eat ham one Easter, and he didn't get an Easter basket, and he's still complaining about it like 40 years later, but that's another story. Okay, here we go. If you do what to an egg, it is said to protect you against lightning, hail, and beehives. A, boil it and eat it. B, dye it red. C, bury it in your garden. Or D, put it on your roof.
Gardening?
That is correct. Bury it in your garden.
Oh, my gosh.
You're really, you're kicking Easter eggs today. All right, here we go. How long will a boiled egg keep in the refrigerator? A, 24 hours. B, 3 days, C, 1 week, D, they don't need refrigeration once they're cooked.
1 week.
That is correct. 1 week. You got 1 week to eat all those. You got to make some egg salad or whatever you're going to do.
I know, Mama. I love boiled eggs.
I do, too. I do, too. I love deviled eggs. And I love all kinds of eggs. I'm kind of like, I'm not into the yolk so much just because I have high cholesterol, even though I exercise and do everything right. I just have genetically high cholesterol. So I try to try to get rid of the yolk when I can. But okay. A female rabbit is called A, a doe, B, a cow, C, a femmy, or D, none of above, the above. It's just a girl rabbit.
Is a doe?
You are correct. You are really doing really well here. All right, here we go.
Oh, my gosh.
You're just.
I watched a lot of Discovery.
Well, that's good. That's good. Okay, what is the name of the dance that is commonly done at Easter time? A, the Easter Parade March, B, the Rabbit Rondo, or C, the Bunny Hop, or D, the Basket Dance?
Bunny Hop?
That is correct. Hey, Ben, can you play the Bunny Hop? Can you play the Bunny Hop? Do we have that there? Didn't I pull that? For everyone who doesn't, for you don't know the Bunny Hop, if you haven't danced to it at a wedding lately, right? Remember that?
Yes.
Forward, backward. All right. That was a musical interlude. Here we go. All right. Now, you heard Judy Garland sing at the beginning. She was singing the In Your Easter Bonnet. Who co-starred with Judy Garland in Easter Parade? Was it A, Fred Astaire, B, Bing Crosby, C, Clark Gable, or D, Burt Lehr? Who co-starred with Judy Garland in Easter Parade?
Can you say the first two again?
Fred Astaire, Bing Crosby, Clark Gable, or Burt Lehr?
Fred Astaire?
That is correct. You are 100%. 100%. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. This one's hard. Where is Easter Island? A, off the coast of Vietnam. B, in the ocean west of Chile. C, off the coast of Northern Ireland. Or D, in the Dead Sea near Israel.
I just learned. I'm pretty sure this is off the coast of Chile.
That's correct. Now, how did you know that?
We were talking about it in school last week. In my Spanish class, which is super weird.
Oh, my gosh. Because that's something that a lot of people don't know, that it's down there by Chile, kind of, I think it's to the west, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. In the song Easter Parade, what street do the characters in the movie walk down? A, Madison Avenue. B, Fifth Avenue. C, Broadway, or D, Central Park West? There's not pressure. There's no pressure on you because you're doing so well. It's just none at all to be perfect. Madison Avenue, Fifth Avenue, Broadway, or Central Park West?
I'll say Fifth Avenue. That is
correct. Wow.
Is this like a prank where they say every answer is correct?
No, I feel like you've paid off the admissions people here. Are you part of this whole scandal?
Oh my! I'm like sitting with my mom in the car, and she's like, "How? Like what?"
All right, here we go. This is a true or false. Ready? Rabbits with long floppy ears can't hear as well as those with their ears upright. True or false?
I'm going to say true because true.
That is so true. Oh my gosh. Now not that I thought would have been false. Okay. All right. We have one more and then we're going to take a break. This is interesting. Pretzels were made by monks at the Vatican to give to the poor as a representation of Lent because they look like Christ lying with arms folded. They don't use yeast and so are unleavened bread. The salt in them was a health benefit to the people. D, none of the above. They were just easy to make.
I'm going to say D.
The only one you got wrong, look like Christ lying with arms folded and praying.
I was going to say that, but I was like, it's too far-fetched.
Thank you so much for playing, Mia. You are going to be getting a Karen Conti show hat, which is very valuable. It will be a collector's item someday. And happy Easter and happy Passover to you, and happy holidays.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Okay. Take care. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.